The Baseball Today podcast is presented by Travelocity. Travelocity's new top secret hotels makes Travelocity.com the best place for hotel deals. This is Baseball Today.
First and foremost, I'm a baseball player.
Baseball's a funny game. There's a round ball that comes in a square box.
And then I ended up getting up and talking. I started to really get going, and I had to kind of cut myself off.
I know the fans are great. You know, this is where I wanted to be from day one.
Play ball!
Baseball Today.
Hi there, and welcome to the Baseball Today. It's Friday, April 16th, 2010. Did you pay your taxes? I did it early. Anyway, I'm Eric Carabao. Behind the glass is Jay Soderberg, and we're going to talk baseball today, mostly me talking baseball today, and getting you ready for the weekend. We'll talk about Thursday's games, take your emails, and anyway, lots of good stuff. Let's get it started. Around the diamond.
News from around the league.
Let's go around the diamond.
All right, Thursday was Jackie Robinson Day, and great ceremony. I was at the game in Philadelphia at Citizens Bank Park, which was a load of fun until Dennis Baez came into the game. But anyway, a good pregame ceremony there. They had Tuskegee Airmen, and just, you know, the ring ceremony was pretty cool, too. But obviously, every player is wearing 42 in baseball, and that's the way it should be. And it was pretty cool, Jackie Robinson Day. And there is this report that African-American players, there's a decline in how many there are, 9.5% of them making opening day rosters, and it's the lowest number it's been in a long time. Last year was 10.2. I don't buy in. I mean, I'm sure it's true. I mean, I'm not saying that it's wrong, but I don't know why that would be or what the reasoning is or anything, and I'm not the one who should be discussing that. Let's put it that way. Anyway, it was a great day in baseball, and let's talk about some of the games that happened. Yes, Phillies lose to the Nationals, and give the Nationals credit. They chipped their way. They scored 6 runs in the final 3 innings. They've got some offensive ability on that team. Adam Dunn hit his first home run. So did Ryan Zimmerman. And Phillies have a bullpen problem, you know, no matter what their numbers looked like in the first, 8 games of the season. Mets win 5-0 at Coors. It's important. Mike Palfrey pitched well again. And if the Mets can get good pitching from people other, of course, than Johan Santana, then they can stick around a little bit. And that's, I think that's what Mets fans need to see. We'll see on Sunday Night Baseball when Mets are at Cardinals what John Main can do in his third start, because his first 2 starts have been awful. Also in the National League, Trevor Hoffman another save as the Brewers beat the Cubs in their place 8-6, though it was a little scary at the end. Brewers score single runs in each of the last 4 innings. The Astros win. Yes, we've been a little bit mean to the Houston Astros in their 0-8 start, but they did win at St. Louis on Thursday. 5-1, Bud Norris, a little messy for 5 innings there. But they got 4 nice innings out of the bullpen. And you know what? You hate to see a team lose like that, but the fact is, I don't think the Astros are among the 3 or 4 worst teams in baseball. I put them there in the power rankings in week 1, but let's see what they do this weekend. I don't know. I mean, like, there's worse teams. I mean, Kansas City's worse, and Baltimore is clearly worse, and Pittsburgh's probably worse. But on Monday, we'll get to a new power rankings, and we'll see what happens. Other stuff in the National League, Tim Hudson wins, but a lot of base runners at San Diego. You don't expect that. And Jorge Cantu is a machine. What is it now? 10 games with a hit and an RBI to start the season. It's some new record, and he is awesome. But let's give a little credit to the guys ahead of him. And Cameron Maben has 12 runs scored in 10 games. You can figure out the pace on that. It's pretty good. Maben also hit a home run, which Cantu couldn't knock him in on. And Florida wins 10-2. They're 6-4, and a big weekend series in Philadelphia for them. But and Josh Johnson pitched well. But Jorge Cantu is just an RBI guy. I mean, that's who he is. He's putting up good numbers. And remember, he has knocked in runs before, 117 of them as a Tampa Bay Devil Ray a few years ago. They were the Devil Rays back then, not just the Rays. Dodgers won an extra inning, 6-5 against Arizona. Arizona's off to a decent start. They're 5-4. Chris Young looks good. Justin Upton's a monster. I just don't know. I watched some of that game, and I'm thinking, Dodgers have a better team. And, Giants, I think, have a better team than Arizona. I don't know. It looks like a fourth-place team to me. In the American League, ever so briefly, Twins win 8-0 against the Red Sox at home, win their first series at home. Francisco Liriano looked awesome. A lot of strikeouts. 8 strikeouts, only 2 walks over 7, and he beats Tim Wakefield. And if Liriano's back, if I knew before the season that Francisco Liriano would be good, I mean, like, I thought he might be good. If I thought he was going to win 15 games, I would have picked the Twins to win the division. And if I thought John Roush was going to be perfect, which, you know, probably won't be all season long, but, should be a great race there. I still think the White Sox are legit. White Sox did lose in Toronto and not a very good start for Chicago's, other team. I don't know, which is the best team in Chicago right now? Cubs or White Sox? Probably close. I mean, I would take the White Sox, definitely, but Yankees win at the stadium 6-2 over the Angels. Phil Hughes wasn't so pretty. He made it through five innings, which is enough. And, you know, Scott Kazmir was not very good. And, you know, at the end of that game, Jabba Chamberlain's in there to get the save, and he comes in the eighth inning with a couple men on base and a four-run lead. So it's a save opportunity for him. And he's there in the ninth inning, and he's got two outs, and somebody hits a ground ball, and Derek Jeter boots it, and Jabba comes out. Well, is it Jabba's fault that Derek Jeter booted that ball? Leave Jabba in to get the save. You know, you don't need to use Mariano Rivera in every single save situation. This is what... One of the things I don't like about baseball and how managers do things in the ninth inning, you know, other pitchers can pitch a two-inning, you know, Burke Badenhop of Florida had a two-inning save the other day. Well, you don't need to use Leo Nunez for a fifth straight day there, and I'm glad he didn't. Badenhop got the save, two-inning save. Pitchers used to get three-inning saves and four-inning saves, Bruce Sutter types. So anyway, here comes, you know, Mariano Rivera to throw two pitches and get a save, a cheap save at that. It's a four-run lead, there's a couple men on base. Now, yes, somebody could have homered there and made it interesting. I think it was Abreu. And I was watching, and I'm thinking, let Jabba get the save. Give him some confidence. Anyway, it's kind of ridiculous. Ben Sheets wins his first game, and he actually pitched well, didn't allow any runs. So good for Ben Sheets, and the A's are 7-4, and they look pretty good to me. Other news that's going on that we need to address, I don't see a whole lot. Let's just move it on. Well, okay, I guess I should make it as good a show as we can, although we do have a lot to get to. Boston's outfield's a little bit of a mess right now. Mike Cameron, Jacoby Ellsbury. I expect by Monday's show we'll be talking about Bill Hall and Jeremy Hermida as everyday players. I mean, it's possible that both these guys are going to go on the disabled list. Brad Lidge eyeing a late April return. No big news there. No surprise. Nothing else. Bud Norris. Okay, good for him. All right, moving along from around the diamond, and now we'll, let's see, are there any good stats here yesterday? Most RBI in first nine team games under the age of 21. Jason Hayward has 12 of them, and the record was Al Kaline in 1955 with 13. I wasn't around for that, but maybe my former co-host was. Anything else? Andre Ethier is a walk-off machine. Can you say he's a clutch player because he has a lot of walk-off hits? You know, it's 10 in three seasons. And second place in most walk-off hits of the last three seasons is Kurt Suzuki with 5. Andre Ethier, twice as clutch as anybody else in baseball? I'm not the one saying that. Although he's clutch, you know, let's give him his credit. Anyway, moving on now, let's take call to the pen.
Call to the pen. You've got email.
That was quick, huh? Anyway, send your emails, baseballtoday@espnradio.com. We will get to three per day. And, wow, we got three good ones today. This is Dave in Bristol, United Kingdom, who says, I always chuckle when you say you're in Bristol. If only the people in Bristol were. It's a great place. Anyway, Dave writes, is there anything about baseball you would change, bearing in mind anything you change loosens the connection with history, even something like sacrifice flies and batting average? Also, who would you say is your favorite player to watch live? Does have to be considered best, just someone you got the most enjoyment from. That email needs some verbs. I love baseball just the way it is. I mean, I was saying earlier with the closers, I mean, when I was growing up, you know, closers would get 6, 7, 8 outs. I mean, if they were your best pitcher, you know, they weren't just pitching 3 outs or 1 out with a 6-2 lead. I mean, yes, I understand you don't want to lose the game there, but, you know, basically the save rule and the save stat has adversely affected baseball, I think. I mean, you know, Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman have had awesome careers, okay? But I just, you know, the way these guys are used, I mean, they, you know, there shouldn't be such specialization. There shouldn't be these, you know, these lefties who come in to face one batter, get them out. Will Owen, you know, can pitch 100 games in a season. But, you know, when you have this much money and, you know, I like it when baseball teams have like 14 hitters and 11 pitchers active instead of now you see some teams that have 12 hitters active and 13 pitchers because there's so much specialization in that bullpen. I don't know. I don't really like that so much. But no, I like the stats and I wouldn't add batting. I wouldn't add sacrifice flies to batting average or anything like that. And my favorite player to watch, look, watching Chase Utley, and I know I'm a Phillies fan, but a lot of people say they love watching Chase Utley play. You have something to say, Jay?
I have Keith Law on the phone.
Do you?
I do. He might be able to tell us who.
Well, we'll ask him this. Keith Waugh, the great writer for ESPN.com, baseball coverage. Keith, are you on the line?
I believe so.
Keith, who is your favorite player to watch live?
Current player?
Yeah.
Depends. I mean, I love watching Albert Pujols hit. I'm trying to think of a guy I really like to watch pitch. There's a couple guys I do like to watch. I love to watch Clayton Kershaw just because he's got three unbelievable pitches. So when Clay Buchholz is on, too, I could watch him throw that changeup all day long.
I love to watch Roy Halladay pitch now that he's on my team. But
I've seen him so much. It's, I would say I don't love watching him pitch. but it's that, it's almost like it's not a treat anymore just because I've seen him a lot. The best part about watching Roy Halladay is that you know you're going to get out of the park inside of 3 hours.
You know, that's a good point. And I didn't make it out of the park Thursday in under 3 hours because Jay Happ threw about 100 pitches in five innings and
walked
six.
Yeah, how about that? Six walks and no strikeouts. How's that going to work out?
That he didn't look good to me. And now I'm finding out his velocity was down. And, the velocity was clearly down for Dennis Bias. So I'm with my kid and he says, Daddy, why do they keep hitting home runs? Well, you don't like it when a relief pitcher comes in and that's what happens. Phillies lose a game they shouldn't have lost there. But one of the things he said earlier in the game that I want to ask you about is why is everybody wearing number 42? Which I think is one of the best things baseball has done over the years and give them credit for that. But of course it was Jackie Robinson Day and I know you're a baseball historian. So what is your thoughts on Jackie Robinson Day? And also, I read earlier in the show, that there are fewer African American players this season, but I don't really know what to make of that. Do you?
I think the issue, it really has nothing to do with Major League Baseball in terms of, are they not letting African American players into the game? No, I don't think. I think that the issue is much more at the youth level. African American kids are not playing baseball in the same numbers that they were 30 years ago. And that decline, obviously it started a long time ago and it's now starting to manifest itself at the Major League level. Major League Baseball now is trying to do some things, sort of a, inner city outreach to try to reach these populations again. But it's going to take time. It's going to be 10 years, 15 years maybe, before you start to see that turnaround at the big league level. And they've done a lot. The Urban Youth Academy in Los Angeles, in Compton, I think has been pretty successful so far. But it's going to take a lot of that in a lot of cities across the country. It takes time. It's good that we've noticed this and recognized that it's not good. I don't think it's good for business. Never mind the social angle. You don't want to let 12% of the American population just kind of drift away from your game over time. But, obviously I do think there is some social good in it as well. And frankly, just getting more kids involved in playing baseball is probably a positive. So, to me, they're doing the right things. It's just going to be a long time before we actually see the results at the big league level.
Since you're one to never mince words, I'll ask you this question, and I probably won't answer it myself, but what did you think of what Orlando Hudson said about the reason why Jermaine Dye is still unemployed? Personally, I don't think the reason why Dye is still unemployed is because of the color of his skin, and I'm a little surprised that anybody would say that. But is there anything to what Hudson was talking about in general with, African-American players, I guess, being treated differently financially or otherwise?
No, I don't think there is. Well, let me step back for a second. There are subtle forms of racism in baseball. I've talked about it before, that the way that scouts evaluate players can often be sort of subconsciously colored by, that's poor choice of words, but affected by the color of a player's skin. We've often talked about how African-American players are presumed to be athletic. White players are often presumed to be heady, scrappy, more intelligent. I've heard these things, and I'm sure that at some point I'd probably fall into the trap a little bit myself, having learned in an industry where these are sort of common norms among the community. And that's not to say that anybody in particular is racist. It's just sort of this philosophy that's been in the game for a long time. However, what Hudson said is very different and wrong. The reason that Jermaine Dye is not employed is because he's not very good anymore, but he and his agent are pricing him as if he is still the player he was 3 or 4 years ago. And that has nothing to do with the color of his skin, but I think everything to do with the fact that players are valued differently in the open market now than they were 3 or 4 years ago, where there's an increased emphasis on defense and on valuing it properly. And so teams are recognizing that Dye is a lousy defensive outfielder and probably has to be a DH, and suddenly his offensive DH is not that valuable anymore, and that all combines to drive his price down. If Jermaine Dye was willing to take a $1 million contract, he would have gotten that job 2 months ago. But he's not, and as a result, he's unemployed. And it could very well end his career. If he doesn't play this year, there's a pretty good chance you don't see him in the majors again.
I think one of the reasons why people look at Dye differently statistically is because they say, oh, he had 27 home runs. He must be good. And I'm looking at now what Jorge Cantu is accomplishing for the Florida Marlins. An RBI every day, a hit every day. I mean, good for him. He is productive, Jorge Cantu. I'll give him that. Awful fielder, no matter where you put him. But he's been productive. RBIs, or RBI, whatever you call them, are the most misleading stat there is in baseball right now. Because, you know, you bat anybody. You bat Casey Cosman third, he might knock in 100 runs. But doesn't make him a good player. Jermaine Dye gets looked at differently because of being a run producer, and Cantu is doing great things. What are your thoughts on the RBI stat?
Useless. I honestly don't look at it. I don't know who led the league in RBI last year, either league. I mean, I don't know who's a good RBI guy because I don't think that that really exists. You want to be a good RBI guy? Hit fourth on a team where the 1, 2, and 3 hitters get on base a lot, and you'll be a good RBI guy. To me, it tells me absolutely nothing useful about the player's performance. I prefer stats that are context independent. In other words, it doesn't matter who's in front of him in the lineup, who's behind him in the lineup, what kind of team he plays for. I want to focus on stats to tell me just about how the player performed himself. I think the whole thing on Cantu is completely silly. It's anachronistic. Most front offices, not all, but most have really moved beyond the sort of the old baseball card stats, RBI, runs scored, pitcher wins, saves. Most front offices, to some degree, are looking at more intelligent ways to value players. Now, there are some front offices that just don't look at stats at all. I know the Phillies have basically said that they don't. And they've been very successful with a scouting-focused approach. But what you don't see anymore in front offices is, again, this focus on sort of the old baseball card stats, because they don't work. They don't tell us, they don't give us useful information about players. And so as a result, you're actually better off using no stats than you are using stats like RBI or saves that are totally context dependent.
So Jorge Cantu is not going to win the MVP award, I guess.
He's not going to get my vote.
Not going to. I actually shouldn't, although he actually, are you aware he knocked in 117 runs a couple years ago? Anyway, last year's RBI leaders were Prince Fielder and Ryan Howard, and they are good run producers, but they're different players. So, and I hope that people would understand that. OPS notwithstanding, there are a lot of other stats that show that difference. And as I saw Ryan Howard make an error yesterday, I remembered it. Would you ever consider taking a vacation in Altoona, Pennsylvania?
No. And I've actually been there twice now, 1999, and obviously last Sunday.
Yes, now you saw Steven Strasburg, and that's why I bring up Altoona, PA, and I don't know where his next start is. Maybe it's Harrisburg or somewhere else.
Harrisburg, yeah. I think he's scheduled to start the second and seventh games of a homestand in Harrisburg, which is smart, right, because you sell out your home opener anyway. So don't start your main attraction for the home opener. Start him in the second game when your attendance would typically fall off.
All right, now, I watched Strasburg pitch on ESPN3.com, but I'm imagining you saw things that I couldn't possibly have seen being live in the stadium. So tell us what you saw.
So he was 97-99 for the first three innings, hit 99 three times, and nothing under 97 until the fourth inning. Breaking ball was outstanding. I mean, developmentally, he doesn't even need to throw it. I'd almost tell him, you know, put that in your back pocket. We've got other things for you to work on to get you to the big leagues. He threw a number of change-ups, which was not something I saw from him at San Diego State because he didn't have to. He threw a couple that were really good, around 87. Good tail. Arm speed was fine. Overthrew a number of them up towards 90 to 92. Pitch tended to straighten out. It was kind of like a flat four-seamer at that point. So he's got to find more consistency with the pitch, and I do think that's going to come just with throwing it more often. The biggest negative I saw on him was that when he either gave up contact or something went wrong behind him, there was a bad error that cost the team a double play, actually, behind him. Strasburg's response was to become less aggressive, to start working away from contact. You throw 97, 98, you should be going right after guys. And if something went wrong behind you, then that's when you've really got to kind of toughen up a little bit and be even more aggressive. So instead of falling behind every hitter, go after them. Knock somebody down. Break someone's bat off at the handle. Back them off the plate, then work away. There wasn't much of a plan. It was almost like a fear response, which is not something I want to see from a pitcher with any kind of stuff. But it's disappointing for a guy like Strasburg, who obviously has the stuff to miss bats at any level. He's got to be more confident that he can do that. Doesn't matter that there's a couple guys on base, it's not really your fault. just go and get the next hitter out because you have the offerings to do so.
And you still think he comes up around June?
I think so. I mean, I saw enough things where if the Nationals said we want him to get 8 to 10 more minor league starts to work on these things, I think it's justifiable. He's definitely got some things that he could work on them in the big leagues too. But he's in Double A now. There's no reason not to keep him down for that many starts, to have him work on fastball command, quality of the changeup, and just, again, learning to pitch more aggressively. Because if there is any kind of fear or anxiety issue there, then better for him to address that first facing Double A hitters than to bring him up to the big leagues, send him to Citizens Bank Park to a tough patient lineup where if he gets a little passive, they'll eat him alive.
10 games in for most teams in baseball right now, and the good teams I think will be good. The National League, Philadelphia, St. Louis, and the American League. Three of the AL East teams, Minnesota, we know is good. Any surprises for you so far? The Bay Area teams are a combined 14-6 so far, and I think at least one of them, San Francisco, is kind of legit. What are your thoughts on teams that have surprised you so far?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, small sample size caveats apply. Double at this point in the season. I mean, I look at that Giants club. It's good pitching. It's mediocre defense, and that's a bad offense. I mean, I think they'll look competitive for much of the year, but I mean, that's not a 90-win club in a division where I think at least one team, Colorado, is going to win 90 games. I don't see the Giants remaining in that race for long. I actually like Oakland a little better. When I was sort of looking at them coming into the season, I didn't pick them to win the division. But I could concoct a scenario where a number of things go right for them. A couple of young pitchers take steps forward. They get big boosts when they call Chris Carter up from the minors, when Michael Taylor debuts, which, I mean, that's going to come over the next couple of weeks. They've got enough young guys internally, big league level, AAA, to kind of sustain it. You know, if they get off to a hot start, even if they're not really that good on paper, that roster, I think, is going to evolve over the course of the season where they might be able to sustain it. Still not the best team in the division for me, but there's quite a bit of young talent there. And those are the teams that, kind of like the Rays a couple of years ago, can surprise you by taking an unexpected step forward.
All right, Keith Law, you see him on ESPN.com's baseball coverage, radio, TV, all that stuff. Thank you for your insight today, and we'll keep watching Steven Strasburg and the minors on ESPN3. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
All right, so that was a nice surprise getting Keith Law in for a few minutes here on Friday's show. And, of course, he always knows his stuff. And you know what? I like his honest answers. I got to be honest with you. I knew what he was going to say about Jorge Cantu. I mean, look, Cantu's off to a great start. I'll give him that. An RBI game is not something everybody does. It's never been done before, actually, at this level to start a season. But it doesn't make him a great player. It says almost as much about Cameron Maybin, to be honest with you, and Hanley Ramirez batting third. But, you know, keep knocking in runs and see if that, you know, he might be an all-star. And I knew the Orlando Hudson thing. I mean, that was a gimme. There was no question what he was going to say about that. And look, everybody's entitled to their opinions, okay? But I just don't believe it. All right, back to the emails, which is where I believe we were. We were in call to the pen. And next up is Ed Hula in Atlanta, who says, today is my birthday. Feel free to mention that in your birthday segment. Now, I don't know if that's actually true, but this is a good time to say that Paul Wehner, known as Big Poison in his career, Hall of Famer, it's his birthday today. Dutch Leonard, pretty good player, his birthday. Pop Sweat and Piggy Ward from the old days. Jim Devlin, wasn't he just named somewhere or something on this show the other day, like third all-time in adjusted ERA or something like that? Tommy Manziel, Houston Astros shortstop, going to be a long year, Tommy. He is 27 year 27? He's that old? I didn't think he was that old. I don't see any other active players. Fernando Vina, Ken Takahashi, and Antonio Alfonseca with birthdays today. So Jim Lonborg, who was one of my favorites growing up, pitched for the Phillies, obviously probably better known as a Red Sox in what, the 67 season, I believe it was. But Jim Lonborg's birthday is today. Anyway, Ed's email says, I've watched some footage of pitchers with extremely exaggerated motions like Hideo Nomo and Tim Lincecum. What is the advantage to that, if any? Is it just how they learn to pitch? I know in Lincecum's example, his father put a dollar on the mound and he had to pick it up. It seems like having that style would just increase the chance of injuries. And then he asks, what are some good books on the early history of baseball? And I frankly, I don't know any. I read books that are about recent baseball. But keep up the great work. I had a dream about your former co-host last night. No other podcast has successfully infiltrated my subconsciousness, so you must be doing something right. Yeah, but you had a dream about my former co-host, so how's that, you know, about this podcast now? I dream about him all the time, too. Anyway, You know, Lincecum, if you look at the way Lincecum pitches, yes, it would scare you if you're spending, you know, $10 million a year, whatever the Giants are spending now, because, yes, it looks like an injury is coming his way. The reason why he throws like that is because it works for him. He's always done it that way, and it's, of course, misleading to the hitters. I mean, if you can hide the ball well, Steve Carlton used to hide the ball great. If you can hide the ball, it's and every little bit helps. Guys who are submariners, it's harder to pick up the ball. That's why a guy like Darren O'Day, for example, of Texas, is hard to hit. Submariners are difficult to hit. Kent Tekulve had 1,000 games pitched in his career. Nobody could see where the ball was coming from or what he was going to throw. You know, Dan Quisenberry. Anyway, Lincecum is awesome. And Nomo had some really good years, too. Final email to get three in, Glenn in Tokyo. I'm here in Japan, where Ichiro remains a big deal all the time, and I wondered if Seattle's painful start continues for a few months, do you think they would trade him? I see that he is also struggling at the plate and looks like someone trying too hard to make something happen, swinging at balls out of the zone, etc. I haven't seen him play that way since he arrived there, and I wondered if he, too, had reached the end of his natural time with the Mariners and would benefit from a change. I don't see Seattle trading Ichiro ever. I think he needs to be with that franchise. I think he would be a Hall of Famer with that franchise. And, you know, it's only 10 games. Let's not assume that he's going to struggle like this all season long. And he's not really struggling that badly. I don't think he's going anywhere. And I also think Seattle in that division where I don't think any team in that AL West is going to win 90 games. So I think Seattle, Oakland, I think all four of those teams could win more than they lose. And I hope that it's a nice four-team race in September. And I think Seattle's going to be in it. You know, once they get Cliff Lee back, that's only going to help. And once Milton Bradley starts to hit a little bit more, that would help. Ichiro's going to be fine. He hits 300 every year. And he's 350 half the time. All right. Anyway, those are your emails. Three per day. Send them to baseballtoday@espnradio.com. Let's send in like 100, and then Jay can pick out three for Monday's show and Tuesday's show and all that. Now time for the view from third.
Almost home.
Taking a look at tonight's matchup.
This is the view from third.
All right, tune into ESPN Radio for Sunday Night Baseball as the Mets travel to St. Louis to take on the Cardinals. Coverage begins at 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Radio, and of course that game is on ESPN at 8 o'clock. Watch baseball tonight. Prior to that, it's an hour show, and frankly, the Sunday Night Baseball tonight, because almost every game has been played, is, I think, the best one of the week. And then you get to watch actual baseball. And John Main on the mound against Adam Wainwright, and say what you will about Main's start, but I can't imagine if he gets pounded here, he's going to get too many other chances. Didn't really get a chance to preview the weekend. I'm not going to because time is of the essence. But I'll tell you what I'm watching for this weekend, and I'm going to be writing this on ESPN.com as well. Some interesting matchups. In that other game, in the second game of the Mets Cardinals series, Johan Santana against Jaime Garcia or Jamie Garcia. Watch Garcia. He's good. I mean, I watched him in the spring a few times. I saw him in person once. He's no Johan Santana, but he could put up some major numbers as the fifth starter for St. Louis. I mean, really, Jamie Garcia, his first outing was very nice. How would you like to be the home plate umpire when Tim Lincecum faces knuckleballer Charlie Hager? Has Lincecum ever faced a knuckleballer before? I got to look that up. And actually, the other game of that Mets series with the Cardinals, Chris Carpenter giving up a lot of home runs facing a team that doesn't hit a lot. So I'm interested to see that. Second start from Mike Leake of Cincinnati. That'll be interesting. The Red Sox are going to be interesting. Cameron and Ellsbury, I think they might be headed to the disabled list. But also, David Ortiz, obviously off to a terrible start, got to sit out against Francisco Lirón on Thursday. Look at J.D. Drew. His numbers are just as bad. Nobody's talking about J.D. Drew off to a horrible start, but really, is he doing any worse than any better than David Ortiz? I don't think so. So anyway, that's something to watch for. Chris Benson, remember him? Anyway, he is scheduled to make his first start of the season for the Arizona Diamondbacks at San Diego on Saturday. And I know everybody will be watching to see what Chris Benson does. Chris Benson, are you kidding me? By the way, for all those in fantasy leagues, there's the Boston Marathon game on Monday morning at 11:05 a.m. So if your league locks with the first game of the week, 11 a.m. is a lot different than 7 p.m. So please remember, I don't even think we'll be doing the podcast before that game starts on Monday. It'll be pretty much around the same time. All right, anything else I'm watching for this weekend? Obviously, Roy Halladay's a joy to watch. He's on Friday night. Lance Berkman, rehab assignment this weekend. Hopefully, the Astros get him back. Carlos Gonzalez, I'm watching to see what the Rockies do here, because if Gonzalez has to go to the disabled list, I would like to see Eric Young, whose father, of course, I know pretty well from ESPN. I would like to see Eric Young Jr. Up in the majors. I think he could be a really good leadoff hitter, and that's just something to watch there. And among big series this weekend, I mean, obviously you've got, you know, the Red Sox and Tampa Bay. It's a big one. And good pitching matchups galore this weekend in that series as well, starting off with Wade Davis, who I think is very good, against Josh Beckett, who we all know is very good. That looks like, of all this series right now, that's the signature series, I would say. So anyway, that's a wrap for this week and, you know, on this Friday show. I want to thank Keith Law for chiming in. A great guest, as always. Honest answers. Check out his work on ESPN.com. He knows his stuff, and he always gives you the answer, you know, the honest answer. He's not afraid to say anything. Jay Soderberg, great job this week getting me all the guests, making everything work. I'll be back on Monday's show. I don't know if I'll be alone or not, but it doesn't matter because you're listening. It's good stuff. I'm excited. Baseball's awesome. Please, everybody, have a great and safe weekend, and I'll be back on Monday.
Thanks for listening to Baseball Today. For more baseball talk, be sure to check out Baseball Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Yeah, that's what we've been looking for.